Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to a fine Sunday morning on a playoff wild card weekend morning, I should say, in the first Sunday of the new year. Happy New Year to those who are listening. Hopefully you enjoy your new year holiday, I should say. It is a new year, so you just a few days into it. This is the January 4th, so it's the fourth day into the new year. Hopefully you brought the new year in well, and everybody was safe and enjoyed themselves. But as we say in this world, everything is not rosy. There's always some good, there's always some bad or some sad, I should say. I am JT, a.k.a. the Master. And as always, when you come here, this time in the morning, this is the Master Plan. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is the place to be if you want to talk to me. We have a chat room open. It's always there for your convenience. Whatever you like to do in that chat room, lay it down, your question, make a comment, a statement. You can do that there too. You know you can do that. Well, let me put it this way. It was a sad day for the day and night, I should say, for the and a historic day for the, unfortunately, for the Arizona Cardinals. And it was also a surprising ending to the season for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Those are the two of the four teams that played yesterday. Arizona went to Carolina to play the Carolina Panthers. And the Baltimore Ravens, against their heated rival, one of their big rivals in the AFC North, went to play the Pittsburgh Steelers. The home team won in the early game, Carolina, even though it was a sloppy game. And when I said history was made, in a bad way for the Arizona Cardinals. 78 total yards, 12 total yards in the second half. Those numbers I'm giving you are the numbers that the work that those players put in produced from the Arizona Cardinals. 78 total yards. That is an abomination. That is absolutely horrible. Total yards. I'm not just talking about the quarterback here, people. I'm talking about the whole team. The whole team. Running back, wide receivers, quarterback, special teams, 78 total yards from an 11-4 team. 11-4 they were. They lost the last two games, and their quarterback play obviously was so inept they couldn't move the offense at all. And don't tell me, Carolina Panther fans, that your team was that much better. I don't think so. Cam Newton was absolutely horrible. He did just enough plays, and the defense put him in just enough situations that it made it easy The score wasn't even indicative of the play. Before you blinked, Arizona had 14 points, and you know why? It wasn't because their stellar offense. It's because Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers early in that game was trying to give the game away. That's how bad that it was early in that game. Cam Newton was absolutely horrible in the first half. Absolutely horrible in the first half. They had more than doubled their offensive output of yardage. I'm talking about Carolina compared to Arizona. And they were losing in that game. They were losing at the halftime. Before you knew it, Arizona had 14 points. And for the most part, Carolina was in scramble mode because they were playing so bad. And I'm telling you, in particular, their quarterback. You would think that that game was not a playoff game, but a preseason game, as bad as that game was. Absolutely horrible. Absolutely horrible. But it is what it is. Can't do anything about it. It is what it is. So, and then we move on to the Sunday night game, where the Le'Veon Bell-less Steelers played the Baltimore Ravens. Now, let me tell you something. Steelers were favored in that game. Steelers were favored in that game. And for some reason, the Steelers didn't really show up. Now, I understand that Baltimore played a better defense. I understand that. I understand that. But Ben Roethlisberger and company? I don't think so. And this is the problem that I saw. And I expressed this through some texts last night. The Steelers, unsure of their rookie running back, Josh Harris, decided to rotate three running backs. If you've known and heard and talked to me on the radio, or if you've been and talked to me in person, or we've conversed on the phone, or you've listened to my program, I am not a big fan of running back by committee. One of the things I do pride myself on is knowing about running backs. And I'm not a big fan of running back by committee. I understand the mindset that they would have preserved the running back. You get a change of pace in there, somebody that can do one thing better than the starter. So you have somebody like, let's say, Jonathan, off the top of my head, Jonathan Stewart is running the football. Then you bring in Mike Tolbert or D'Angelo Williams. It has a change of pace, change things up. But I'm a big proponent. You put the running back in there and you let him get into the flow of the game. You keep rotating running backs. You keep rotating running backs and you don't get a even flow. The offensive line and the running back have to get into a flow, in my opinion, in order for the running game to be effective. You keep running different running backs in there, you can't get a flow. The offensive line is not sure of what running back versus the next is going to do. You get one running back in there, you get focused on that one running back, and you use him, unless he's absolutely horrible. And I think one of the things that Pittsburgh went away from is this. They had Le'Veon Bell. He was the bell cow. He whether LeGarrette Blount was there or not, was the guy. He got the majority of carries every now and then. LeGarrette Blount, when he was there, would come in and spell him. But after LeGarrette Blount left, he got the full workload for the most part. Every now and then, Dre Archer would get in there and take up a couple carries. Not much. It was all on Le'Veon Bell, whether he caught the ball out of the backfield, ran the ball in between the tackles or outside. Le'Veon Bell got the ball. Well, what did they decide to do, Pittsburgh? They decided, now they just acquired Ben Tate, who had been on two teams already, and then released from both teams. They picked him up because Le'Veon Bell got injured. Okay, that's fine. They started him. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Why would you start somebody that just fresh off the street rather than have faith in the guy that had to look like he has some potential and has some something that you could work with? But what happened? They start with Ben Tate, and they rotate for the most part Ben Tate and Josh Harris back in there. Even after Ben Tate fumbled the ball. Bad, bad coaching. Bad, bad decision, in my opinion. You put in Josh Harris. You said you had faith in Josh Harris. He ran pretty effectively when he took the place of Le'Veon Bell the game prior to that when they played Cincinnati. So why not put him in here and let him see what he could do? And then, as a resort, go to Dre Archer or even Ben Tate. Not start Ben Tate. Now you rattle the confidence of the running back that thinks he's going to start. You probably told him he's not because this guy that just came fresh off the street is going to start. So what kind of confidence are you portraying? None, in my opinion. None, in my opinion. So what happens? You know what happens. Come on. You know what happens. Ben Tate, in my opinion, didn't run effectively in that game at all. Not at all. You can see that Josh Harris was one block away or half a second away from breaking it, because if you watched how the running back was, the running was done in that game. I know Baltimore is a very good against the run, but the more effective back was, in fact, Josh Harris in that game for Pittsburgh. Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind. It's not because I'm biased, because I may have had him in FanDuel in some tournament. No. I'm looking at it objectively, and what I'm seeing it with my own two eyes. What I saw in Cincinnati and what I saw when those two backs were in the game. And Ben Tate is who he is. Plain and simple. Is who he is. Dropped from Cleveland because he didn't run effectively. Plain and simple. And that's why he'll probably be dropped, or he probably won't be retained in Pittsburgh. He was just a stopgap, which was a bad choice, in my opinion, to put somebody that's fresh off the street and have him start in the playoff game. Come on. That bad. Absolutely. I couldn't believe they did that. But it happened. But that's not the whole other thing. The other thing is, look like the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, Matt, maybe the defense of Baltimore had a good game plan, but it seemed like the Pittsburgh Steelers were pretty tentative in what they wanted to do. Seemed like they Ben or the game plan was like they were lost without Le'Veon Bell. Now, I know everybody said it was on Big Ben's shoulders because of the fact Le'Veon Bell wasn't there, so they're going to have to rely more on the passing game. Big Ben threw over 300 yards, like I said yesterday. He only threw for one touchdown. He threw for a few picks. And one, which is, this is the way I'm talking about here. Big Ben, I think it was in the fourth quarter, they were driving down the field. At one point, Big Ben got sacked and had a nice shot that he had to go to the sidelines and get tested for concussion protocol. So the backup quarterback coming in there, and he came in 3rd and 21, and every result they got the first down. Well, after they got the first down, Big Ben comes back in there, and the first play, he throws an interception. Obviously, he hadn't got himself together. So, in my opinion, bad decision. I was absolutely surprised and in disbelief. The bad decisions that were made on the Pittsburgh Steelers in that game. Starting Ben Tate, a guy that's fresh off the street in a playoff game that doesn't know your system, as well as Josh Harris, who's been with the organization, who's been with the and played in a game and did pretty well. That's one bad decision. The other bad decision is to have Big Ben come in there and fresh off a knock, fresh off testing him for a concussion protocol, and he immediately, and you can fault Big Ben because he's the one that threw the pick, but you have to fault who let him back into the game at that point. Regardless of the situation, who let him back in that game at that point? Obviously, he wasn't of the, I wouldn't say of the right mind, but he wasn't thinking straight. And what you do? What do you do? You set yourself up to failure. That was a crucial part of the game. Extremely crucial part of the game. They had cut the lead down. By half. Now the pressure's back on Baltimore to move the ball, to do something with the ball, to keep the clock going and to make first downs. But what is it, 5 or 6 minutes left in the game when that happened, when it bent through that interception in the end zone? Now Baltimore's got the ball on the 20-yard line and can run the clock that much more. Up by 15. Makes no sense. The other bad decision, I think at one point they went for two when they scored a touchdown. Why? I'd have to give a bad grade. I understand that Ben may not have one of his best games. He threw, like I said, he threw over 300 yards. He threw, over 40 times in that game, damn near 50 times. I can't fault him because of some of the decisions that the coaching staff made. Before I get back to the playoff games, because I want to talk about some more of these playoff games, I just saw an article come out online that it happened this Sunday morning. I really like this guy on ESPN. He was only 49 years old, and he passed away this morning. Talking about the longtime anchor at ESPN, talking about Stuart Scott. He lost his battle of with cancer. He had been battling that for over a few years, and he passed away this morning at, like I said, the age of 49. This guy was a sports legend, believe it or not, as a broadcaster on ESPN. Long time guy. This guy was a good dude. He leaves it. I think he's got at least one daughter, maybe two daughters. I think he's got two daughters. My hat is off to Stuart Scott. The last time he was in public was then when he was at the ESPYs in July, and that was shortly before his 49th birthday, and he accepted the Jimmy V Award for perseverance, and one of the things he said, when you die, it does not mean you lose to cancer. You beat cancer by how you live, why you live, and in the manner in which you live. Stuart Scott passed away this morning at age 49, like I said. Long remembered, and I'm pretty sure the people at ESPN do feel this. One of the great ones in sports TV has gone on to a better place. I want to give my condolences to the family and friends of Stuart Scott. That's all I have to say about that. All right. Let's get back to some playoff football and maybe talk about some early games or tournament games in fantasy football. We got two games on the docket today. Two games that are coming up today on this wild card weekend. What we have going today at the 1 o'clock game, now, bear with me for a minute, people. I got something going on here, and I don't know why, for some reason, it decides to go. Bear with me for here. All right. Before I go to the daily games, let me do this. I wanted to talk about, and I wanted to finish the talk about the Arizona Cardinals. Hopefully Carson Palmer comes back because they're a big-time wide receiver. Larry Fitzgerald may be finding a new home. Doesn't look like Fitz is going to be back with the team. He's a huge salary come next year, and just like all aging players, that their production has dropped off. It looks like the Arizona Cardinals are going to be asking Mr. Fitz to take a pay cut, and more than likely he won't. And I have to think that if Larry Fitz doesn't stay with the Arizona Cardinals, and Larry Fitzgerald and the Arizona Cardinals, I can't see, but it always happens, I can't see this player, Larry Fitz, in any other uniform. But ESPN Boston's Mike Reese thinks that the Patriots could have some interest in Larry Fitzgerald if he's released by the Cardinals. Now, you have to think that the Fitzgerald-Patriots connection isn't a new one. He's due $16.25 million in 2015. And like I said, he's probably going to be asked to take a pay cut, and if he declines, just like a lot of players that refuse to take a pay cut, he's going to be let go. Larry Fitz is going to be 32 coming this summer. And you know Larry Fitz wants that ring. And New England is expected to release Danny Amendola, but would be better off adding a downfield threat to go along with Edelman and Brandon LaFell. Now, we all know Fitzgerald isn't Randy Moss, okay? But he's a solid receiver that you can count on, and he's not never had that blazing speed, but he is a solid receiver. And to get on and you can see what he can do when he's playing with a top-level quarterback. You can see that when he was with Kurt Warner, when Kurt Warner was throwing to Larry Fitzgerald. You can see that with times when Carson Palmer was thrown and Larry Fitzgerald was the go-to guy. And that offense in New England, if he was to go there, just think about what Larry Fitzgerald could do. Just think about that. Just think about it in fantasy-wise. You know, when you have a, and I think this guy's going to be a Hall of Famer. I really believe it. I'm talking about Larry Fitzgerald. Getting a ball thrown to him from a Hall of Famer quarterback like Tom Brady, if he happens to land in New England, and New England's been known to take supposedly washed-up receivers, and they ball out, I can see that. Now, we all know that Josh McDaniels is had multiple offers to get for a head coaching job, okay? For the Falcons, for the 49ers. I'm trying to think of some other ones. But those come to mind, the Falcons and the 49ers. Now, so if Josh McDaniels leaves, Bill Brady always happens to find another guy that and to keep that same philosophy that he has in New England to go, to flow from one offensive coordinator to the next. And Brady and company don't skip a beat. You have to think that if for some reason McDaniels happens to take a job somewhere, whether it's been in Atlanta, where Dimitroff and Pioli work with McDaniels in New England, and it seems like they're high on McDaniels coming down on that, but the owner is high on Rex Ryan. We'll see how that plays out. That there could be a strong possibility of once the playoff run is done, if nothing's finalized before the Patriots resume their playoff run, that Josh McDaniels is going to find himself a job, along with these other head coaching candidates, Doug Marrone, Rex Ryan, even Mike Shanahan, even the Kyle Shanahan, and Dan Quinn, to name a few, that are going around a coaching carousel, the merry-go-round, and visiting these different sites and putting their hat, throwing their hat in the ring, getting interviews and trying to pick up one of these vacant head coaching jobs. Not as many as last year or the year before. There's not as many out there. So you have to think that the owners and the general managers of some of these places that are looking for a head coach or also looking for a general manager have to do their due diligence and make the right choice. Because as we all know, if you don't make the right choice, that's going to set your franchise back a few years. All right. Let's do this. I'm going to take a break. I'm going to take a break and pause for the cause. And we'll be right back after couple commercial breaks.
Victor Gardner began the fantasy sports and politics brand with the idea of combining two of his passions into a radio show. He then learned that politics were 95% of sports. When you tune into the Fantasy Sports and Politics show every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, Mr. FSP himself, Vic Gardner, and Jerry the Master Taylor will go over the weekend sports, prep you for your upcoming fantasy games, and spark a debate politicians would love to hear. That's the FSP Show every Saturday at 1 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/DICHBK. You can listen at spotonradio.web.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365 for other informative programs as well. Information, motivation, variety.
Thursday night is the right time to kick back and listen to the FSP Crew Show as they break down the weekend sports and prepare you for Thursday night football. 8 p.m. Eastern, just before the game starts, Jerry the Master Taylor hosts the show with Jeff the Joker Goldberg and Mike the Bookie Monster Wright. The three gentlemen debate and discuss a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of everything on the FSP Crew Show every Thursday night on blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can listen at spotonradio.webs.com after the show as it streams 24/7, 365, and listen to other informative programs as well. Information, motivation, variety.
You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it.
That's right. You don't play it to just play it. You play to win the game. And that's what's going to take place just like yesterday. Today, starting at 1 o'clock with the Cincinnati Bengals visiting the Indianapolis Colts. And both those teams are hoping to move on to the divisional round of the playoffs. Cincinnati is going to try to right the wrong from week 7 when they played the Indianapolis Colts and lost 27-0. But that was week 7. Since then, Giovanni Bernard is not starting running back. He's a change of pace. Now the rookie, Jeremy Hill, number 32 in your program on the Cincinnati Bengals, is the starting running back. And he's been balling out since then. And just think about this. Just think about this, people. Just think about this. Indianapolis Colts and their defense is below the middle of the pack. They're 20th overall against the pass and against the run. They can be run on. They can be passed on. Have to go into an offensive-minded team that likes to throw the ball and spread the ball around, who are not that doesn't do a good job of running the football. I'm talking about the Indianapolis Colts, who are first in passing and 22nd in being able to run the ball. Indianapolis is pretty good against the pass. They're number 12th in the NFL, and they're 18th in preventing running backs to get the best of them. Opposing running back average about 113 yards versus 229 yards in the passing game, which is good. The passing game is a lot different, even though the yardage is higher, but that's good. The problem I have is this. Both these quarterbacks And I talked about this yesterday. Both these quarterbacks have the same problem. Andrew Luck has thrown for 40 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, and has 12 fumbles. So he's turned the ball over 28 times versus 40 touchdowns he's thrown, which is fine. But you have to think about this. Because he's turned the ball over so much, he's had to make up for it. And I expressed this before, that just like Andy Dalton, and I'm comparing these two guys because sometimes some they're similar in a ways, but they're not. And I was talking about Andrew Luck, and I'll still talk about him. Andrew Luck, like I said, he's throwing for 40 touchdowns, which is great. 16 interceptions, 12 fumbles, 28 turnovers. 28. That's crazy. That's crazy. But because he's started off slow or done things to hurt his team early, everyone thinks he's a great quarterback because he's pulled games out over and over again. Well, just think about this. He throws the ball a lot because the team doesn't run the ball that effectively. He throws the ball a lot because he has to make comebacks because early in the games, he has a tendency to start slow. He makes mistakes, puts the team in a hole, and then he has to make up for it. Thus, throwing the ball all over the place. Thus, maybe some interceptions or fumbles. But Indianapolis has a tendency to start slow a lot of times, and that includes Andrew Luck. So you have to think that you would hope that Andrew Luck starts a lot cleaner, have a early cleaner game than he normally does. Otherwise, we could run into, and I'm not, this is going to be extreme, but I'm saying we could run into a sloppy game like the Arizona and Carolina game. But the two quarterbacks that are in this game, talking about Cincinnati and Indianapolis, well, I would consider Andrew Luck better than Cam Newton. I wouldn't consider Andy Dalton better than Cam Newton. But Andy Dalton had only thrown for 19 touchdowns. True, they're a running team. But as many touchdowns as he's thrown for, he's had almost that amount of interceptions, 17 being in his interceptions, and 3 fumbles. So even though he's only thrown for 19 touchdowns, he's had 20 turnovers, 17 interceptions, 3 fumbles. But it's a run-oriented team. So both these young quarterbacks, one more so than the other, is prone to create turnovers on their own. Now, which is better? Let me put it this way, and I'm gonna leave this up to you because, quite frankly, I'm thinking if you have more turnovers than you have positive plays, like 19 touchdowns versus 20 turnovers. turnovers, a combination of interceptions and fumbles, you're worse. But Andrew Luck, 40 touchdowns, 28 turnovers, 16 interceptions, 12 fumbles, 28. Which is worse? Which is worse? Andrew Luck's got a rating over 90. Andy Dalton got a QBR quarterback rating 55.2. Andrew Luck has a quarterback rating of 63.8, 8 points higher. Which is better? You can say numbers don't lie, but come on, people. You got 28 turnovers over there. I know that 40 touchdowns, it looks pretty good, but that 28 turnovers it bothers me a lot. Bothers me a lot. Double-digit interceptions, double-digit fumbles. That bothers me a lot. And everyone sings the praise of Andrew Luck, who's thrown for over 4,700 yards, completion rating of completion percentage of 61%, and 40 touchdowns, 16 interceptions, 12 fumbles. They're saying that Andy Dalton's bad. Well, let's look at the games. Look at the games. And I know who has the bigger name. I know who I like in this game. And it's not by much, but I know who I like in this game. And it, like I said yesterday, when I talked to Victor yesterday on the FSP show, 1 o'clock on Saturdays, Eastern Standard Time, that's the FSP show with Victor Gardner and myself as Victor Gardner's host. I am the co-host of that show. And I expressed it yesterday, and I'll express it again today. In the playoffs, quarterback play is key. Not that it's not key in the regular season, but in the playoffs, quarterback play is key. Look at the quarterbacks from all the playoff teams, and you can pretty much say who's going to win the game. Look at the quarterback play in the Carolina and Arizona game. Even though both quarterbacks were bad, to real bad, one quarterback was by far the worst compared to the other. And the better quarterback won. Look at the quarterback play of the Pittsburgh and Raven game. I know that Ben Roethlisberger threw for 300 yards, but look at the efficiency that Joe Flacco had in that game, and the better quarterback play prevailed. 1 o'clock game, Cincinnati and Indianapolis. Look at the quarterback play, and the better quarterback play is the one that's likely to win the game. Same as the late game, the 4 o'clock game, Detroit versus Dallas, which I haven't talked about yet, which I will. Look at the quarterback play. Who plays better, Tony Romo or Matthew Stafford? Directly linked to who's going to move on and who's going to go home. Plain and simple. This is not rocket science. This is plain and simple. Just look at the quarterback play. Now, I had just talked about the Cincinnati and Indianapolis game. Let's move on to the most interesting game, I think, of the weekend. And that's the Detroit Lions visiting the Dallas Cowboys in Jerry's World and playing this wild card playoff game to move on. I'll push this question out to y'all. You want to call me? The number is 347-637-3220. Give me a call, 347-637-3220. Who's got the most pressure to win this game? Matthew Stafford, who hasn't won a playoff game yet, and who 4-14 on the road, the Detroit Lions, want to be taken seriously, or the 12-4 home team of the Dallas Cowboys, who for the most part are expecting at any time for the Dallas Cowboys, because it's the late part of the year, December or whatever, to implode with Tony Romo. I emphasized this yesterday as I was watching the games with friends of mine late yesterday, and we happened to be talking about this game. And like a lot of people who watch the football, like a lot of people say that Tony Romo was going to choke it up. And they say that I was a Dallas Cowboy fan. I'm not a Dallas Cowboy fan. I'm a football fan. What I see is what I see. And in my opinion is this, it's a totally different Dallas mindset, totally different team than what you've seen in the past. Time and time again where so-called experts or fans or people who watch football say that the Dallas Cowboys are going to fail. It's just a typical Dallas Cowboys here. Watch them. They're going to fold up like a cheap suit. They thought they were going to fold up for the most part in Philly 3 weeks ago. And they kicked Philly's butt. They thought they were going to have a letdown and they were going to play their players last week against Washington. And they balled out and they played their players from start to finish. All year. Now, I know I sound like a Dallas Cowboys fan. I'm not. I'm a football fan, and I'm what I see is what I see. All year. In fact, before this, season started, the mindset was we're going to run and pass when we need to. And you know what, people? That's exactly what they've done. They've run the football and passed when they needed to. And they've been very effective at it with a 12-4 record, changing people's minds as they go, including myself. Now, I was a little skeptical early, but as I watched as many games as I could possibly watch, especially of Dallas, I got convinced early that they were going to slip back into let Tony Romo sling the ball over the field, and maybe we'll run the ball every now and then. They got an offensive line of a bunch of first-rounders in there, including the one they just drafted, and they're balling out. Monster, one of the best, if not the best, offensive lines in all of football. with a back that can run and catch the ball. And like I explained to my friends yesterday, when you have that, and you bring the safeties up because they're running the football that effectively, that leaves one-on-one coverage on the outside with Terrence Williams and at times Cole Beasley and the big boy, the beast, Dez Bryant. And what happens? You get big, like Mike Tomlin said, splash plays, big plays down the field with Dez Bryant and company. Tony Romo's balling out because they're running the football effectively. Matthew Stafford, on the other hand, in the Detroit Lions, don't run the ball that well. They do not run the ball that well. And this may hurt them in this game. This may hurt him in this game. Well, the simple fact is this. Dallas is eighth in the NFL, allowing just a little over 100 yards a game versus 26th against the pass. So Detroit is running the football, which Dallas is pretty good at stopping. Detroit's strong point is throwing the football, which Dallas is weak at. On the other side, and this is going to be very interesting, Detroit's, if you want to call it a weakness, Detroit's strength is stopping the opposing running back, or running game, I should say. The number one, allowing less than 70 yards a game against opposing rushers. The number 13 in the NFL in stopping the pass. So if you just go by that, you say, Detroit has a very good defense, and how are the Cowboys going to move the ball? Well, Detroit is 12th in passing the ball in the league, and they're 28th in running the football. 28th in running the football. Dallas is second in rushing offense, and 16th in passing. So all intents and purposes, this should be a good game. Now, I want to put this in. I got 5 minutes left in this show. All right? 5 minutes left in this show. And I want to go over what I have going on in my FanDuel. Because I have, and I haven't done this all year. I've stayed away from this religiously. But come the end of my regular fantasy football, and I need my fix. I decided to go and play some daily games and some tournaments. And I'm in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Take away 1, 2. I'm in 9, 8 tournaments and 1 league play in daily. And believe it or not, I have the same lineup in all of them. I decided to do that. And here it is. I started with Ben Roethlisberger, Josh Harris, because I like Josh Harris. I thought that we were running the ball a lot more effectively than they did. I know that Baltimore is very good against the run, but I wanted to take a shot with Josh Harris because I wanted to be able to have some studs in each department, especially in the passing game. So I took Josh Harris, and I also took Antonio Brown, which he gave me double digits, which is fine. I also took Marcus Wheaton and took a shot there He came just short of a double digits, which is, I understand that. I also have Dez Bryant going today, along with Jeremy Hill, which is, I think, in my opinion, very good options. Good options. Dez Bryant, the primary target for Tony Romo, and Jeremy Hill in that run game can, and in the Indianapolis can be run on. I thought that was a good opportunity for me to capitalize on that. I also have Dwayne Allen. I like Dwayne Allen, believe it or not, better than Kobe Fleener in this game. And I thought that Dwayne Allen could be effective against the Cincinnati. So I decided to take a shot with him. And one of the best kickers in all of football, playing home against an offense that can move the ball up and down the field. I took Dan Bailey, and I wasn't going to settle for anything less than that. So I decided to take Dan Bailey, and because of, and I expected more, and unfortunately they got 16 points. I expected less than that, but I took Carolina's defense. They gave me double digits. I can't complain about that. I wasn't expecting Carolina to play that much worse in order to give opportunities to Arizona to get easy scores, but 11 points out of Carolina. I thought that was probably the best out of all the defenses I could possibly get. Against a really bad deep offense. So I figured the defense of Carolina would benefit from a bad quarterback play, which I talked about before, from Arizona. So I figured we could capitalize on that. And we did. And now I'm looking forward to what happens today. I'm looking forward to Jeremy Hill running wild. I'm looking for Dez Bryant. At least give me a couple of touchdowns. I think he can do that in this game. I think Dwayne Allen, I like him because I think Andrew Luck is going to be throwing the ball a lot like that offense always does, and I think Dwayne Allen can benefit from that. And like I said, I think Dan Bailey is going to get a lot of opportunities to kick the ball, whether it's a field goal or extra point. So I think I got a good shot. I'm trailing by quite a bit, but in the tournaments that I'm in, I'm looking just to make some money. I didn't put a lot into it, so if I make a profit, I'll be happy with it. Tune in next week. We'll be talking about the playoffs and the divisional rounds. We'll also be talking about probably some more daily because I'll be playing that more leading up to the last game. As long as they have these daily games now, I'll be playing them. I don't normally play them during the regular season, but the regular season is over, playoffs here, a lot less games, and I can concentrate on trying to get paid here. Tune in next week, same time, same place. JT is what they call me, but you can call me the master. This is the master plan, and hope to see you back here once again. And it's been a pleasure. See ya.